When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, and welcome to The Short Stuff. I'm Josh. There's Chuck. Producer Dave is out there somewhere in spirit, which means it's Short Stuff. Hamina hamina.
Plus tax.
Plus what?
My friend Meredith used to say, hamina hamina plus tax. Is that not a thing?
No.
What's hamina hamina mean?
Hamina hamina is just kind of like an old vaudevillian thing. I'm not exactly sure what it means or where it came from, but I always associate it with like old-timey vaudeville stuff.
Please don't let it be racist.
As I was saying vaudeville, I was like, oh, God. I feel like maybe like Jackie Gleason or Laurel and Hardy. Not Laurel and Hardy. Abbott and Costello,
racist.
Maybe.
Yeah, as long we'll as it's not out. From a minstrel show.
Right, yeah. But yeah, I think it's like a exclamation of excitement or looking forward to something.
All right. Well, I see Jackie Gleason on the internet, so hopefully we're covered.
You see Jackie Gleason on the internet?
Saying hamina hamina.
Okay, good. All right.
Okay. Let's just get going.
So yeah, this is a Short Stuff, Chuck. We're never going to be able to end this now. We're talking today about Brazil, the country that was first landed, as far as Europeans go, by a guy from Portugal named Pedro Alvarez Cabral, right? And he landed there in 1500, and things went pretty poorly for the local populations as a result.
Yeah, and I think Cabral was one of those people that Brazil had always celebrated as the first European to show up there.
Yeah.
And like, you know, this is our person, and let's celebrate this person. And then in the 70s, something happened. I don't know where you found this. It's very interesting. But something happened kind of put that all in doubt.
I found a contemporary New York Times article about it. I don't remember how, but I did. And I said, by God, this is a gift from Zeus himself.
So here's what was happening for a while. There were fishermen off of Guanabara Bay near Rio who for years had been fishing and saying, hey, we'll pull up our fishing nets a lot of times and we'll get these jars in our nets. And we think this might just be like the local native tribes used to offer these up, you know, before Cabral actually landed on the scene. Mm-hmm. And maybe these are ancient, who knows? And then in 76, a man named Jose Teixeira was diving there, brought two of them to the surface and said, I think these are really, really, really old.
Yeah, and not just really old, too, because that could have been accounted for by the native tribes, but they were in a shape that people hadn't seen before. And Teixeira brought them ashore and I guess handed them over to the Navy, I think, who kept them in a tank of seawater for a very long time until they caught the attention of a guy named Robert Marks, who went on to become, I don't know if he was or not by this time, I think he was fairly famous, but he went on to become a world-famous, deeply renowned underwater archaeologist. In fact, he's known as the father of underwater archaeology. But he caught wind of these jars being found and had a look at them or got his hands on some pictures of them and said, these are not supposed to be here. These are not some local Brazilian jar. These look a lot like Roman amphora. And Roman amphora were jars that were used, very famous, like vase jars with the double handles at the top. They were used by Romans, Phoenicians, and Greeks back around the turn of the last millennia. And there's no good reason that these should be here in this bay in Brazil.
Yeah, so after first thinking it might be a hoax, he did say he thinks they're real. And let me get some other divers and go down there and check out and see what's going on. And about 90 feet down, sure enough, they found about 200 intact and broken amphora, and they were he said they were kind of concentrated in an area about the size of 3 tennis courts.
Very interesting.
And he was like, sure. And he said, there's no way that these were planted here. He said, you know, these things, some of these were like 5 feet under the mud. Mm-hmm. We had to dig them out with our hands out of the mud. And they're barnacle encrusted. Some of them have coral, and this coral was killed off like 30 or 40 years earlier. So there's no way these were planted down there anytime recently.
Yeah, he became pretty convinced that it wasn't a hoax. And his suspicions were backed up by an expert that he enlisted from UMass named Elizabeth Will, who was an expert in ancient Roman amphorae, which is like, that is a very specific focus of study. But she basically, she looked at the type of them, looked at their manufacture, like she got her hands on some of the samples that Teixeira had brought up, I think. And she said, not only are these Roman amphorae, I can tell you exactly where they were made and roughly when. And she traced the design of these particular amphorae to a place called Kouass, K-O-U-A-S-S, in what is now present-day Morocco. And the Kouass amphorae of this design were being made around the 3rd century CE, so about 1,200, 1,300 years before Pedro Alvarez Cabral showed up in Brazil in 1500.
Yeah, so Marx puts that together and says, all right, I have a theory. He said they used to have boats back then and ships that could make, you know, that certainly could have traveled over here from the Mediterranean. Mm-hmm. And I think what might have happened is they were blown off course, maybe, and they ended up kind of shipwrecking after they anchored off Rio. Maybe there was a big storm or something that drove this ship onto a reef, and these jars just kind of ended up here, and no one knew that they were here until these fishermen started pulling them up.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a pretty good assumption, especially considering that these jars are spread out over about a 3 tennis court size area. That's maybe the size of a Roman ship's hold. And it's possible since they had seaworthy ships. But the thing is if that were true, that would totally rewrite history. Mm-hmm. Like, it was how there used to be vague legends about how Vikings made it to North America. And we suddenly found that settlement. I can't remember the name of it. That was a Viking settlement in North America that said unequivocally they had been here before. This would basically be like that, but there had been no legend before it. No one had any idea that the Romans had made it to Brazil in the 3rd century. So this was it required a complete revision of history, even if it was just this tangential fleeting contact between one small group of Roman sailors and prehistoric Brazilian tribes. It still was a big deal to find these things there.
All right, maybe we should take our break and come back and talk about the response of Brazil right after this.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated.
AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
All right. So Marx has this theory. He's got these jars. The Brazilian government steps in and they don't say, "This is amazing. Thank you. Why don't we're going to have a press conference and here's a podium and we want to hear all about it." They said, "You know what? You're shut down. We're shutting down your operation. Mm-hmm. We don't like the looks of this." He started excavating again, I think in 83, or was that the first one?
No, that was the second time. The first time was when he found them and said he found like a couple hundred of them and that they were spread out over the tennis court. This is when he returned the next year to really excavate the site in earnest.
And he also found out that the Navy, the Brazilian Navy, like literally covered this stuff up. It dumped a bunch of fill dirt over the site and said, "You know what? We think you're a plunderer. We want to keep it from being plundered. And we covered it up and you're banned. You can't even come into our country anymore."
Yes, he was accused of having stolen artifacts from other sites in Brazil and selling them on at European auction houses, essentially on the black market, but out in the open. They had just been basically stolen from Brazil. That's a huge accusation to level against somebody. But apparently the Brazilian authorities were convinced enough by it that they actually banned him from Brazil and shut down all marine archaeological excavations in the country. There was just a blanket ban on them because they had just been so, I guess, rattled by the perceived theft of relics. The thing is, you know, if Robert Marx had been anybody else, just some dude, it would have, it would have been easy to buy that had happened. But he really had a good reputation, especially by the end of his life in 2019, right?
Yeah, he was knighted in three countries. He wrote the UNESCO laws about underwater archaeological digs, and he was a book writer. I think he's kind of the granddaddy of underwater archaeology. He was very much not a plunderer of things. So it seemed like Brazil was being a jerk.
It does. So that seems like a bit of a twist that they would literally cover up this history rewriting site. And at the time in that New York Times article, I think Robert Marx suspected that it was because they were so venerating of Cabral that they couldn't stand the idea of somebody, some other Europeans having beaten him there by hundreds of years. The thing is, it's entirely possible that the Brazilians didn't cover up that site and that there wasn't 200 of those amphorae and that there was no Roman galley that sunk in Brazil. It's possible none of this happened at all.
Yeah, I mean, this is the real cool twist here, is in 1983, there was a diver, a free diver, named Americo Santarelli. And Americo said, "Hey, you know, all this hullabaloo about these amphorae, these are mine, these are replicas, and I buried these out there to try and age them. I dropped 16 of these things out there to age them, and that's what they are."
Yeah, he'd spent some time in Rome and had kind of fallen for amphorae. They were his thing, kind of like how some people collect different outfits to put on their concrete geese that they keep out in the front yard. This guy was into amphorae like that.
Sure.
The thing is, okay, so Americo Santarelli claimed that those were his amphorae after this world-famous underwater archaeologist had declared that there were 200 of them buried 5 feet beneath the muck, that a UMass expert had declared that they were made from coas in Morocco in the 3rd century. This guy says, "Nope, they were mine, and there were only 16 of them, and I dropped them there in the 60s.
Yeah, that's the one thing I couldn't reckon with. Were there not 200? Was that just BS?
Here's the thing. It's kind of like the end of The Usual Suspects. If you go back and look at all of the evidence we have,
it's right there on the wall.
Almost all of it is coming out of Robert Marx's mouth. He's the one who saw the 200 amphorae. He's the one who said that they were spread out over a few tennis court size fields. He's the one who said they were encrusted by barnacles.
He's the one who sang in a barbershop quartet in Skokie, Illinois.
That's exactly right. And when you go back and you look at this, you say, well, wait a minute, there's not really much other evidence to back up this idea that he has aside from him saying all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the most telling thing about how they actually were Americo Santarelli's 16 amphorae that he dropped in the bay to age is that Robert Marx just kind of dropped the whole thing. The whole thing goes cold after that.
Yeah. Isn't that weird?
It is very weird. He even wrote a book in 1992 that was about prehistoric contact between Europe and the Americas. And as far as I know, he didn't mention the jars in the bay in Brazil. And that's that as far as I'm concerned, you know.
I think since we mentioned Usual Suspects, we should shout out friend of the show, Kevin Pollak, one of the stars of Usual Suspects, in a role where he gets to play the rare heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin has a great improv comedy show on our network called Alchemy This.
Yeah, that is a great show. And actually, he has a cameo in our book, too. I can't remember what part
That's
we talk
right.
about, but there's one of the footnotes is about the live show in L.A. where he brought us water because we said we were thirsty. He brought us water up on stage.
That's right. And he also played the role of Christopher Walken in my Movie Crush April That's Fool's right. interview a couple of years ago that delighted a lot of people and angered a few.
Hey, man, if you're delighting and angering at the same time, you're doing something right. So hats off to both of you for that.
Yeah, love Pollak. Good dude.
Good dude. Well, I think that's it, right? You got anything else about Kevin Pollak or Brazilian jars?
No, I want to get my hands on one of these.
Well, just start diving.
Okay.
And you will find one in Brazil off the coast of Rio.
Great.
And since I said that, everybody, that means Short Stuff is out.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.